Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark LeVillier. Coming up in this hour, sitcoms. Later on, we hear the popular team of George Burns and Gracie Allen from 1948. But right now, it's the Halls of Ivy with the Campus Baby episode from June 4th, 1952 on NBC, starring Ronald and Benita Coleman.
Voice of America presents The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
Good evening, this is Ronald Coleman.
And Benita Coleman.
Inviting you to join us again on the campus of Ivy College. And now, The Halls of Ivy. Welcome again to Ivy. Ivy College, that is, in the town of Ivy, USA. Somebody once observed that a letter is an unannounced visitor, and a postman is thus the agent of impolite surprises. Well, it looks as though Dr. William Todhunter Hall is going to have a lot of epistolary company this morning when his wife, Victoria, brings an armful of letters into his study and says,
"Darling, I know how busy you are this morning, so I've already sorted the mail. I took out all the ones addressed to Mr. and Mrs., and here's your batch."
"A batch? Vicky, my sweet, I would hardly describe two as a batch." "Batch is a quantity or number of anything coming at one time and treated as a set."
"A set? Oh, I see, like a batch of tennis, or I just had my hair batched." "Or a batching hen."
"Well, for your information, which you may find useful on rainy afternoons, The origin of the word batch is the Anglo-Saxon bacon, to bake."
"Oh, I always thought bacon was what you brought home from a horse race if you were lucky."
"No, dear, that is B-A-C-O-N."
"Oh."
"Which brings up another interesting word association, the use of various edibles for the word money. Oh, there's cabbage, lettuce, dough, beans, sugar, berries, gravy."
"Then you can have fish. Lend me 10 fish until payday."
"Mm-hmm." "Or just part of a fish. Lend me a fin." "Or just a buck, which is a male deer, which is meat, which takes care of the whole subject, of which I was getting a little weary anyway."
"It's hardly worth the time we spent on it."
"But getting back, is there anything interesting in your batch of letters?"
"Nothing except there probably won't be a bachelor left in this college the day after graduation. These are all invitations to weddings."
"Ah, yes. June plus graduation equals marriage. A mathematical equation which sometimes makes me feel that despite my concern with administrative and academic problems, I am, in the final analysis, simply a marriage broker."
"Business is flourishing and everyone is going to live happily ever after."
"Well, some people have scornfully referred to colleges as matrimonial bureaus."
"But don't stop, darling. Louise will get it."
"Oh, to be sure, it is not the purpose of an educational institution to provide mates and helpmates for its inmates. But since marriage, as I can fervently testify, is the desideratum, the summum bonum,
Hello, Brogan. Hey, are you folks busy?"
"We're no busier than usual at this time of year."
"Yeah, this time of year. I'd like to rewrite the calendar, leaving out June entirely."
"Why, what's the matter with the joyous month of June?"
"Who enjoys it? Maybe you and your bride, not me."
"Well, is this a general mood of depression, Grogan, or something particular?"
"I'm up to my neck in particulars."
"Well, come on. Don't just stand there. Give us a particular."
"House mothers."
"What?"
"Oh, all of a sudden they love me. They can't live without me. How can you hold a dance without Grogan? And all on the same night in 17 different places."
"That's a tribute to your ability as an officer of the law and your graceful presence as a gentleman, Grogan."
"It's ruining my digestion, that's what it is. 17 different kinds of cake in one night." "Yeah, but I didn't come over here to talk about myself, Doc. I got another beef."
"You have a beef?"
"I just used the word in what you might call a slang way."
"Colloquial."
"Idiomatic."
"That's right, idiomatic. And if that idiot, excuse me, idiot is no way for me to talk about a professor, even if he is, which he is. Look, Doc, I got nothing against education.
Oh, on the contrary, Grogan, you have viewed our educational activities with considerable tolerance.
And you've been very nice to the students, even in their more irrational moments, too, when they're being what we might call non-campus mentees.
Well, I'm glad to do it, whatever it is. Anyway, if I may be permitted to say so, and who's going to stop me, some of your teachers need an education in the facts of life.
Oh, we all do, Grogan. Teachers are human beings doing their best to teach other beings the human values. As H.G. Wells said in his Undying Fire, teaching is the greatest of all tasks. It is to ensure that man the divine, grows in the souls of men. An untaught man is but himself alone, as lonely in his ends and destiny as any beast. A man instructed is a man enlarged from that narrow prison of self into participation in an undying life. That began we know not when, that grows above and beyond the greatest of the stars. Well, that's what H.G. Wells said about teachers.
Well, I ain't no H.G. Wells, and I don't make no broad statements. I don't say all teachers is inhuman. I just got one of them in mind. Him and his corny jokes. Jokes, did I say? May heaven strike this laughter from me lips.
Well, would you care to be more specific in your...
He doesn't have to be more specific for me, William. I'm sure he means Professor Heaslip.
None other than the saint.
Well, now, Professor Heaslip has certain mannerisms. We all do. But, Grogan, I must assure you that the head of our English department is thoroughly competent.
Competent in the head, maybe, but no compassion in the heart. He won't even give a girl a break.
For what girl?
Well, maybe you don't know, but it's Caroline Swanson. Lives off the campus in a boarding house. Now, folks, you know I ain't sentimental.
Oh, of course not. Heart of stone, Grogan.
Oh, you're completely unemotional, except with dogs, children, and the first 8 bars of Mother McCree.
Well, anyway, that poor kid. Husband is overseas in the army, her working part-time and the studying and the worrying, just trying to keep her head above water. And this professor throws her an anvil.
I'm sure that whatever Professor Heaslip has done has been only in the performance of his duty.
It's his duty to send her the examination papers.
What's the matter with her, Grogan? Is she ill?
Not exactly, but the doctor told her she had to stay in bed, and Heaslip said it was too bad, but he couldn't make no exceptions. And she would have to come to class to take the exam or else.
Well, if she's under a doctor's care, that is certainly an extenuating circumstance. However, it is not unusual at this particular time of the year for students to develop strange symptoms. Blue book allergy.
Compound fracture of the thesis.
Inflammation of the curriculum.
Oh, she ain't really sick. She's going to have a baby.
Oh, a baby. Oh, and with her husband overseas, and she's here all alone.
Oh, well, a baby. Is it very... I mean, is this child... Well, how imminent is the... Is it?
It ain't imminent at all. It's going to be almost any minute.
And Professor Heaslip is being unsympathetic.
I imagine Professor Heaslip must have been so involved in trends of 18th century prose that he was unable to recognize an act of God when he heard about it. But thank you for bringing this to my attention, Grogan.
Well, that's why I come here. It ain't exactly in my department, but I figured that you'd know what to do about it. So now, it's your baby. So long, folks.
Goodbye, Grogan.
Oh, Grogan. Yes. Almost the first thing you notice about our Mr. Grogan is that he isn't sentimental.
No, he isn't. He cries at card tricks. Did you ever watch him after graduation when the students start making their round of farewells? He suddenly develops a terrible head cold.
Yeah, I know. It kind of makes your eyes water. But, darling, now we've got to get in touch with Caroline Swanson right away.
Yes, she must be Donald Swanson's wife. He was graduated last year, and I did hear that he'd gone into the army. Appropriately enough, into the, the infantry.
I know who she is now. She's a very pretty girl. Works part-time in the campus knit shop. very foresighted of her. I hope she gets a discount.
Vicky, I suppose it would be pointless to try to explain this kind of human problem to Professor Heathcliff.
Oh, yes. He probably thinks a bassinet is some kind of medieval musical instrument.
And a crib, something his students are doing behind his back. Well, I shall take the matter into my own hands.
Oh, good for you. Go right over Heathcliff's head.
No, I shall not go over his head, Vicky. I shall meet him head on. I shall call upon him, collect the questions, and supervise the conduct of the examination in person.
Oh, darling, I love you when you get that determined look on your face. And if you don't mind my quoting your own James Russell Lowell, all the beautiful sentiments in the world weigh less than a single lovely action. And it's awfully nice of you to want us for Saturday night, Mrs. Merriweather, but Dr. Hall's been out all afternoon, so I'll have to call you later after I've spoken to him. You see, yes, goodbye. She says half past five. Well, I'd better tell Louise the dinner will be a bit late. I wonder what's keeping the... Hello?
Hello, Vicky?
Oh, were you trying to get me, darling?
Yes,
I was just talking to Mrs. Merriweather. They've invited us for dinner on Saturday night.
Vicky.
But I told her I'd have to ask if we had anything on, you see.
Vicky,
and then she said after that...
Vicky!
Well, what's the matter, darling?
Caroline Swanson.
Oh, of course, the examination. How's it going?
No, she's going. Vicky, she's going to have the baby.
Yes, I know that. Oh, what now?
Yes, right now. I'm taking her to the general hospital. If anyone calls, refer them to the maternity ward.
Well, they'll probably think the ambulance picked up the wrong member of the family, but I'll tell them.
No. Just explain that I am acting in loco parentis, as a Latin term, meaning that with the father absent, someone else has to go crazy.
The Voice of America is bringing you this presentation of The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
Now to return to the Halls of Ivy. It's later that evening, and we find Mrs. Hall just entering the Ivy General Hospital in search of Dr. Hall.
Dr. Tyndall, Dr. Tyndall, you're wanted in surgery. Dr. Tyndall, report to surgery.
Excuse me, nurse, but could you tell me where I might find Mrs. Donald Swanson?
Mrs. Swanson?
Mm.
Just a moment, please. Oh, yes, that's the maternity case, third floor. But you can't see her now. I think Mr. Swanson's in the father's waiting room, though.
Yes, Mr. Swanson, but that's impossible. He's in Korea. And I... Oh, yeah, that Mr. Swanson. Yeah. Thank you, nurse. Excuse me, nurse. Could you tell me where is the waiting room for maternity cases?
Right down the hall and to your left. Who are you waiting for?
Mrs. Donald Swanson.
Oh, yeah. Well, it'll be some time yet. You're a relative?
Yes, well, that is...
Well, I think I saw Mr. Swanson in the waiting room a few moments ago.
Yes, of course. Well, thank you very much, nurse. Yes. Mr. Swanson, I presume.
Oh, darling, I'm so glad you... Mr. Swanson!
In the confusion, nobody's been told that the father is overseas, so the nurses think that you're Mr. Swanson.
Good heavens, they do.
Yeah, I'm supposed to be a relative, too. They're very strict about visitors.
Well, I'm relieved that you're here, my sweet. This is quite a nervous business. After a life neatly regulated by the clock and classroom bells and undeviating schedules, this uncertainty is... Wouldn't you think that nature, being a mother herself, would arrange these things with a little more efficiency?
What do the nurses say? Have you asked them?
No, dear, I haven't. For some unaccountable reason, I'm afraid to ask them the simplest questions. I shouldn't say unaccountable either. It's just that all nurses treat the rest of us as congenital idiots.
Oh, yes. I know. You say, what day is it, nurse? And they say, no, we are not going anywhere, dear.
I think it's their use of the editorial we that intimidates me. Shall we have our bath now? look what we have for our dinner. Some lovely mashed turnips and skimmed milk. We must get a good sleep because we are having our basal metabolism in the morning. It's that we. Gives the impression of speaking for a powerful and sinister organization.
Yeah. And a terrifying abbreviations. Have you ever heard them talking amongst themselves? One nurse will say to another, did 323 have his EKG? Yes, but it was NSG, so they ring a PDQ first thing in the AM.
Yes, that is if his COD compare up under the AFL. Well, then they pat their little starched caps, swish their little starched skirts, and take their little starched conversation down the hall.
Well, starch or no starch, they're mighty handy to have around.
Yes.
Let me go ask them how Caroline's doing.
Oh, I've already asked them that. And I've already had the answer, an exasperating ambiguity. She's doing fine, just fine. But, Vicky, hasn't she been doing fine for an awfully long time now? I mean, I've been here since 6 o'clock.
Now, Toddy, now relax. As if you hadn't got enough on your mind. All the preparations for graduation and... Here you are, standing in for an absentee father when you should be home, writing a speech about education for the future.
Well, in a way, I'm doing what you might call field work on that subject. Why, I've already held up 5 expectant fathers, and just between ourselves, Vicky, it's not as easy as passing out diplomas. As a matter of fact, one of them passed out in my arms.
One of the diplomas?
I guess I'm not making much sense. But, Vicky, do you realize that we might sit here for months, perhaps years, behind an antiseptic iron curtain, forever speculating on what really goes on in the minds of these angels of mercy?
Oh, now, darling, there's a good reason for the way nurses act. The less they tell you, the less there is for you to worry about.
Yes, I suppose so. But you know, Vicky, this has given me an idea for the curriculum of our medical school. Using as text a book called The Stork, Symbol of Fatherhood. What a clumsy bird, the stork, with no sense of timing. Long legs to facilitate floor pacing. Red eyes denoting sleepless nights. A long neck for stretching around hospital corridors. And a big bill for services rendered. The book would also into... Grogan, come in. Glad to see you.
Well, come and join the reception line.
Well, you'd think somebody would have told me. How is it going?
Well, that, Grogan, is my own unrequited question. I've been reduced to mute expectancy and silent patience.
I know. Listen, Doc, I was one of 14 kids. The fifth, I think. No, the fourth. So I helped my pop wait up for 10 of them. And when we was waiting for me, brother Aloysius, Pop and me slipped out to the ballpark, seen a doubleheader, and got back with 30 minutes to spare. That's why Aloysius was always my favorite brother. He was so considerate to be get born in the daytime.
Dr. Shulman, you're wanted in maternity. Dr. Shulman, this is an emergency.
Well, I wonder if that's Caroline's doctor, William.
Shulman? No, I don't think so. She called her Dr. Carter, I believe.
Oh, Dr. Carter? I just went in there when the drugstore at the corner having a sandwich. Oh, so you got plenty of time to kill. Hey, how's about me scaring up a deck of cards? Maybe we could play a little auction pinochle.
I'm afraid I'm not familiar with the game, Grogan.
I learned it from the stagehands myself. Even now I can't play it unless I'm sitting in a draft with the orchestra tuning up.
Well, how's about some penny ante poker?
No, poker's a little out of my line, too. I play it so badly that even with aces wired and sitting under the gun with the case ace in the discard...
That's enough, Doc, that's enough. Teaching somebody to play poker that talks like that, I might just as well hand you my paycheck. No, sir, I'm no pigeon.
Very smart of you, Grogan. Dr. Hall plays poker like a riverboat gambler. You would be a pigeon to take him on.
Pigeon? You know, I've always been interested in how that stout-bodied, self-assured bird, well able to take care of itself, was chosen as the symbol for one who is victimized. Now, you take the pouter pigeon, a variety which I've always... Why the meadowlark, one of the most common of all birds, is also one of the most popular. And then, of course, Grogan, there is the celebrated nightingale. You remember Keats's ode, "Thy plaintive anthem fades past the near meadows, over the still stream up the hillside, and now it is buried deep in the next valley glades. Was it a vision or a waking dream? Fled is that music."
I beg your pardon.
Do I wake or sleep?
You'll really have to be more quiet.
This is
a hospital, you know.
Oh.
And there are patients sleeping.
Oh, of course. I'm sorry, nurse. I didn't realize.
Yes. Well, just so you keep your voices down, please.
Yes.
She has probably had a very unhappy love life. Don't pay no attention to that hatchet puss.
She was right, Grogan. Was I really shouting, Vicky?
Oh, no, Toddy. You were just a little carried away by Keats. But it was lovely.
Yeah, sure pretty, Doc. I'm a city kid myself. I don't know nothing about boys. Except I used to get them all the time. Only boy's nest I ever seen was in my sister's hats.
But how in the world did I get started on the subject of bird life?
Well, it was a triple play, darling. Pinochle to polka to pigeon.
Ah, yes. Well, under the circumstances, I think we'd better try patience. Yet can I not of such tame patience boast as to be hushed and naught at all to say?
Excuse me.
Oh, I'm sorry, nurse. Was I talking too loudly again?
Oh, no, not at all. As a matter of fact, you can shout if you want now. Congratulations. It's a boy, Mr. Swanson. An 8-pound boy.
Yes, darling, I've been revising my address for graduation. It seems that my experience of last night has led me to invest more vitality and hope into the subject of facing the future. But, Vicky, you went to the hospital this morning. Were you able to see Caroline?
Yes, darling, and she's fine. And the baby is such a little dolly. It's blue-eyed and bald as a knee. And, you know, she's naming him Donald Todhunter Swanson.
Todhunter?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, well, that wasn't necessary at all. No, I don't think she should have done that. After all, did she really? Very interesting.
Well, darling, she's terribly grateful to you, and she's such a sweet girl, you know.
Excuse me, darling. Dr. Hall speaking. Oh, hello, Professor Heaslip. How did it go? Oh, splendid. 7 pounds, 14 ounces, the boy. Oh, you mean the examination. Well... Well, I have postponed it. The exact date will depend upon the availability of a babysitter. Incidentally, Professor, how's your schedule? Yes, well, I'll be in touch with you, Professor. Goodbye.
What'd he say?
He said, with characteristic originality, that circumstances alter cases, and considering the merits of this case, the quality of mercy is not strained. And he finished up with the eloquent observation that now is the time for all good men to come to the aid of the party.
Professor Heaslip said that. Oh, Toddy, he's slipping.
He slipped? Oh, Vicky, Vicky. Oh, after all I've been through.
Well, be brave, darling. Anyway, Toddy, you were a dear to stand by when Caroline was having her baby. This is not the regular duty of a college president, you know.
I know, my darling, but time was of the essence. Besides, the idea of this young mother, alone here at Ivy with no one else at hand. Oh, of course, she was prepared to go it alone, without asking for help. But after all, when one's sympathy is enlisted and not drafted, the enlistment must be served.
We'll be seeing you next week at this same time at the Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Colvin. Grogan is played by James Gleason, and the nurses were Janet Warren and Jean Tatum. Tonight's script was written by Barbara and Milton Merlin and Don Quinn.
Oh, we love the halls of ivy that surround us here today.
This production of the Halls of Ivy was broadcast with an actual audience present in the studio.
The Halls of Ivy on Tuned to Yesterday from June 4th, 1952 on NBC, featuring Ronald and Benita Coleman. And although a very revered actor, Ronald Coleman's heyday was just about over at the time of this radio series, having a film career that stretched back to the silent film era, 2 years after this broadcast, The Halls of Ivy would be seen on television for a season from 1954 through 1955. It's an hour of sitcoms on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier, and now a comedy team very popular on radio with a good transition to TV. It's George Burns and Gracie Allen in an NBC broadcast from May 20th, 1948.
Well, hello. Come right in. Oh, George, we've got company.
And now meet the people who live in the Burns house, George and Gracie. Well, last week, Gracie's mother arrived at the Burns house for an extended visit, and she's made it very clear that she doesn't approve of her son-in-law being in show business. She keeps telling Gracie that she should have married a bricklayer, or a carpenter, or a mechanic.
Or a painter, or a plumber, or an electrician. Someone who'd be useful if anything goes wrong around the house.
Oh, George is pretty handy, Mama. When our radio was broken, George got it fixed with one finger.
One finger.
He went to the phone and dialed the repairman.
There you are. Your husband is a puny, helpless little nincompoop. Why, I'll bet if the light suddenly went out, he wouldn't do a blessed thing.
Well, Mama, we've been married for 15 years.
I mean, he wouldn't know how to fix them. Oh, Gracie, darling, I'd like to go back to San Francisco. But you need someone around here to look after you.
Oh, but Mama, George is a wonderful husband. Even if he isn't show business, he's a good provider.
I don't believe it. How can he earn a living on the radio?
Oh, he makes people laugh.
But on the radio, who can see his face?
They don't have to see him, Mama. He's a fine comedian. Well, George is...
Hello.
Oh, hello, dear.
Well, where have you been? Have you been out shooting pool and gambling?
I was
down... Of course you have. Where else would you be? How much did you lose? Everything you had, of course.
I was down...
And now you're home to borrow money from me. Well, now, you're getting the money from me. You're not getting it from me unless you steal it. Would you stoop to that?
I wouldn't
stoop. Oh, you would you, huh? Gracie, are you going to stand by and see your husband steal my money?
I have no
idea. George, give Mama back her money. I want her to like you. She doesn't think that you can earn a living as a comedian. Well, prove it to her that you can. Make her laugh. Tell her a joke.
Tell her a joke?
Yes. Tell her the joke about the baker who worked night and day because he needed dough.
Tell it. You just...
Go on, show her how you make a living.
But, Gracie, you just...
You heard what she said. Tell me the joke about the baker who worked all day and night because he needed dough.
A baker worked day and night because he needed dough.
He must have a sideline.
Well, you didn't tell it very well, George. I even had the feeling that I'd heard it before.
It's hard to work without
but
makeup.
That's not his greatest talent, Mama. You should hear him sing.
He sings?
Oh, just like a bird. He's even fooled some of our neighbors into shooting at him with an air rifle.
A pity they missed.
Sing for Mama, George. Open up the blast furnace of your throat and melt her down.
Okay. Here's a song that'll do it. Sure, I love the dear silver that shines in your hair. And the brow that's all furrowed and wrinkled with care. I love the dear fingers so toil-worn for me all.
Shut up!
Ivy who got me into this. I think I'll go pay him a little visit.
He'll have to be mighty handy around the house before I learn to like that little snook.
Come in.
Hi, Gracie.
Oh, hello, Bill.
George here?
No, he's gone over to see Joe Bagley. Say, Bill.
Hmm?
You think you could teach George to be handy around the house?
Well, the little man's not so good, huh?
Oh, Bill, he's dreadful. Last week he tried to repair the vacuum cleaner and the refrigerator.
What happened?
Well, when he put them back together, the vacuum cleaner bag filled up with ice cubes. And every time I opened the refrigerator door, it sucked me in.
Well, maybe I can help, George. I'm awfully handy at tinkering with gadgets.
Really?
Oh, they call me the biggest tinkerer in the neighborhood. Should have said that slower.
Yeah.
Gracie, why the sudden urge to make George a handyman?
Well, because then Mama will go back to San Francisco satisfied that George is a good husband, and everyone will be happy.
Oh, well, it's easy to convince your mother that George can fix things. Now, I'll just slip down in the basement and loosen a fuse and shut off the water valve. Then when your mother says the lights and water don't work, George goes down in the basement, and with a simple twist of the wrist, he's a hero.
Oh, you think that he can fix them?
Well, all he has to do is screw in a fuse and turn on a valve. A moron can do that.
Oh, well, then I'm sure George can handle it.
I'll go right down in the basement and turn them off.
It's your fault she's here, Bagley.
Oh, don't worry. Don't worry. I'll think of some way to get rid of your mother-in-law. What does she do that annoys you?
Well, for one thing, she gets in the bathroom first every morning and stays there for hours. My legs are giving out.
Your legs?
It's 5 blocks to the filling station where I shave.
Well, at least they clean your glasses for you.
What was that? And another thing, she leaves the lights on all night while she reads.
Hey, I've got it. If those are the things she does, we can make her want to leave.
How?
By lousing up your wiring and plumbing so there'll be no lights and water.
Joe, you're a genius.
I know. So I'll get Clara to invite Gracie and her mother here for tea. Then we'll sneak down your basement and rip out all the wires and pipes.
Rip them out? But I won't be able to fix them again.
After the old girl leaves, call a repairman.
Well, okay. I'll meet you down at my basement. So long.
Yeah. Hello, Sam. This is Joe Bagley. How's the plumbing and electrical business? Good. Say, do I still get a 10% commission on jobs I find for you? Yes, well. Yeah, I'm lining one up that ought to run about $500.
Hey, Joe. Joe.
Ah, there. All the water pipes are down.
Hey, Joe, take it easy. Hmm? It'll cost me $50 to get those put back.
What's 10% of that?
$5.
We're just getting started, George. Now let's rip out these electric wires.
Hey, Joe, they'll charge me $30 to replace that.
Let's see, 10% of 30, $3. How much do you think it would cost to repair that gas pipe?
$10.
Well, a buck is a buck.
What's that 10% you're figuring? What is that?
Well, that's a discount. I may be able to get you.
Oh, of course, I'm a pro.
Yeah. At Sam's Repair Shop.
Oh.
Sam's, here's the card.
Yeah, I better bring my card, too.
Yeah, now come on, let's rip out the rest of these pipes first.
Yeah. George, Mother has some news for you. She may be heading back to San Francisco tonight.
That's right.
Oh, it worked already, huh? Oh, boy.
I've only been staying here because I didn't think you were capable of looking after my daughter properly. But now the lights and water and gas have all gone on the blink.
You don't say.
Yes, I do. And now, here's my proposition. If you can prove to me that you're a handyman by fixing everything, I'll pack up and go home.
I have to... Oh, no. No!
Oh, see how anxious he is to get started, Mama? He can't even wait for a hammer. He's beating on the sink with his head.
And it's not doing the sink any good.
Oh, well, don't worry about a thing, Mama. George will go right down to the basement and fix everything.
But, honey...
Come along, dear.
See, I can't fix this stuff. Look at this basement. Gas and water pipes all over the floor. Wires ripped out off the wall. And the hot water heater disconnected.
Oh, boy. When Phil Goodwin turns off a valve, he really turns it.
Huh?
It looks like he chased a girl through here.
Bill Goodwin?
Yes, he turned off the water and lights so you could turn them on and be a hero for Mama.
And in the meantime, Joe Bagley and... Oh, well. There's no use crying over spilled milk.
Oh, did he knock that over, too?
I'll never get this plumbing fixed.
Oh, but you've got to. Then Mama will like you. You'll be a plumber and she'll be your friend.
Yeah. But I don't know a gas pipe from a water pipe. And the electrical wiring is down, too.
Well, I'll help you, dear. Remember, it's the only way you can get Mama to go home.
Well, okay. You stand there by the main electric switch, ready to throw it when I tell you.
Mm-hmm.
I'll fix this if it's the last thing I do.
Atta boy.
Well, now, let's see. I'll pick up this electric wire. Oh,
I like you when you look so determined. Sparks shooting from your eyes, in your ears, and your nose.
Gracie, throw the switch.
Yes, dear.
Well, hurry up. Turn it off.
Well, I can't. I don't know where I threw it.
The daring young man on the flying trapeze. Right on the button, Meredith. The summer circus season is underway, so chill the pink lemonade and scatter the ground with tan bark.
And pass me another bag of peanuts, Toby. I've been a sucker for a circus ever since I first crawled under the tent flaps back in Mason City, Iowa.
Yes, the circus is full of rich, warm memories for all of us, Meredith. The early morning chill and mist at the freight yards, the glaring red and yellow of the bright painted wagons, the strains of the calliope down Main Street as you tramp behind that gay parade. These are all memories that easily explain why, down the years, the circus has always been such a thrilling and popular part of the American scene.
George. He fixed the gas pipes and the water pipes and the electric wires just like a professional repairman.
That's right. And now that you're satisfied, I'm a good husband, I guess you'll be heading back home. I'll be sorry to see you go.
Not so fast. Let's see if things are really fixed. Turn on that water faucet, Gracie.
All right.
Gas! There's gas coming out of the water faucet.
That's impossible. Turn on the gas stove.
All right.
Oh, no.
I thought so. A handyman, is he? And the gas stove squirting water.
Well, Mother, it's not so bad. When you want to take a nice hot shower, just crawl in the oven.
Sure.
And I suppose when I'm thirsty, I just turn on the faucet and take gas.
That's an idea.
What was that?
Nothing, just a slip of the tongue.
Well, it'll be a novelty when you turn on the faucet to wash vegetables. It'll be the first time people ever gave ravages gas.
Wait right here. I'll go down to the basement and make a few changes. I switched a few wires and pipes around. Turn on the gas now.
All right.
What happened?
The lights went on in the living room.
I'll turn on the water faucet. There. What's that?
The phone's ringing.
Well, answer it.
Hello?
Who is it, dear?
It's you, Judge. You're talking in the faucet.
Well, I give up.
It's about time. And go see who that is standing at your front door.
I didn't hear the door buzzer.
Well, neither did I. I'll go with you, dear. Excuse us, Mother.
Howdy, little lady.
Oh, hello, Mr. Judson.
Howdy, little man.
Hiya, Tex.
Say, I'm afraid I'm a mite damp. I pushed your door buzzer and the lawn sprinklers went on.
Oh, fine.
George has been trying to fix the plumbing and the wiring to show my mother he's a handy man.
Yeah, but I can't do it. I'll have to give up and call the repairman Joe Bagley recommended.
Why, shucks, I'll fix it for you.
Can you fix plumbing?
Well, I wish I had $1 million for every oil well I pipe. Come to think of it, I have.
See, George, I've got a wonderful idea. If Mr. Judson can slip down to the basement without Mother seeing him, we can tell her that you fixed everything.
Yeah. Then she'll go home.
Well, now, I'd regret not meeting your mother, little lady. I bet she's as pretty as a movie star.
She's got the looks and build of a Texas steer.
Prettier than a movie star.
Yeah, she's a doll. Well, come on, Mr. Judson. We'll slip in the basement window. Now, Gracie, don't let your mother come down the basement. If she sees Judson, I'm finished.
Oh, don't worry. I'll keep Mom in the kitchen. Good luck, Mr. Judson. Hope you can lift those pipes. They're awfully heavy.
Well, now, don't you worry. I can lift them with one little jerk.
He'll help you, but don't call him that.
He'll help me, but don't...
What's that?
Well, that's George, Mama. He's back down in the basement fixing everything.
Well, I suppose this time he'll have the water squirting out of the light sockets. Better go down to the basement and see that he doesn't kill us all entirely.
Oh, no, don't go down to the basement.
Why not?
Why not?
Yes.
Well, George doesn't like to have an audience when he works. You know, that's why he was so happy in vaudeville.
Well, I think...
Uh-oh, there's someone at the back door. Come in.
Hello, all. Came to the back door because your front lawn sprinklers are on.
Oh, well, that's all right, Meredith. Have you met my mother?
No, I haven't. But any mother of yours is a friend of mine.
Well, I want you two to meet. This is my mother, Meredith Wilson.
Oh, what a coincidence. We have the same name.
Well, I don't have to stand here and listen to this simpleton. I'll go down the basement and see how the other one's doing.
Oh, no, Mother. We'll send this one down.
I shall be happy to descend to the basement and observe the progress of the other one. Pleased to have met you, Gracie's mother.
I'm glad it's over, too. Gracie, I think I'd better look down the basement and see how your husband's doing.
Oh, wait, Mama. Bill Goodwin just drove up the driveway. I'm very anxious for you to talk to him.
Why?
Why? Well, he's Irish like you are.
He's a son of old Aaron?
Yeah, that's his father, old Aaron Goodwin. excuse me, Mama. I'll let him in the back door.
Hi, Gracie. I was driving Professor Corkendorfer downtown. I thought I'd stop and see how the...
Bill, don't ask me any questions, but you're Irish and you're keeping Mama out of the basement.
No questions, huh?
No.
Well, I'm game. I'll be right out, Professor Corkendorfer.
Mother, I want you to meet that handsome Irishman, Mr. Bill O'Goodwin.
O'Goodwin?
Uh-huh.
But, Doctor, a moment ago it was just Goodwin.
Well, my girlfriend's changed it for me. You see, whenever they're on a date with me, they keep saying, O'Goodwin. O'Goodwin.
now, what part of the owl's sod is your favorite?
Griffith Park.
This man doesn't sound like an Irishman to me. I'm going down to the basement to watch my stupid son-in-law.
Faith, now, Mrs. Allen, sure you're not to be going down a dark and dirty basement and depriving me the company of a colleen as young and pretty as yourself. Be jabbers.
Go along with you. Gracie, did Mr. O'Goodwin kiss the Blarney Stone?
No, Mama. He doesn't waste his time on things that can't kiss back. Oh, George.
Yeah?
I'm taking Mama over to Dr. Miller, the psychiatrist.
It's about time.
Come and get us when you're ready.
Well, job's all done, little man. Your plumbing and wiring is all TX.
TX? You mean okay.
In Texas, we say TX. Okay reminds us of Oklahoma.
Where's Meredith?
Well, to keep him out of the way, I told him to sit in the corner and smell that water pipe to see if there was any gas coming out.
Oh. Well, thanks a million, Mr. Judson. I'd offer to pay her, but all I've got with me is cash. Ah.
All you've got is cash. Oh, I despise your sense of humor, little man. I'll be seeing you.
Come on, Meredith. Let's get Gracie and her mother.
Oh, no, George. A leak might still occur in this pipe. I shall stay by my post and smell.
Suit yourself, Stinky.
Bill, are you still in the house here? Here is Professor Korkendorfer. I'm tired of waiting in the automobile. Hello? Speak up, somebody.
I'm down here, Professor.
Somebody spoke?
Yes, I'm Meredith Wilson in the basement.
Who are you when you're upstairs?
Meredith Wilson, why don't you come down and join me? You're standing right at the head of the steps.
You don't gotta tell me where's the steps. I got ice like a hound. Here I go.
Gee, Professor, I'm afraid you missed the steps.
That's ridiculous. I hit every one of them. What are you doing here?
I'm smelling this water pipe to see if gas comes out.
Gas out of a water pipe? Something is wrong with the plumbing here. While I'm waiting for my friend Bill Goodwin, I'm gonna fix it.
But Professor, I think everything is fixed.
I gotta have a look-see once. I got ice like a hawk. Aha! Here is the trouble with the plumbing. They got soft pipes.
Professor, you're holding my leg.
So? How could you have such skinny legs and such a big stomach? No.
That's the hot water heater.
Well, anyhow, I'm gonna fix the whole works. Now, first, I clear away the spider webs.
Professor, those spider webs were electric wires.
Smart spiders. Now they kill the flies by electrocution.
Well, I got no time for bugs. I get busy now and fix the plumbing.
Come in, Gracie. Come in, Mama. I want you to see that I've got the plumbing and wiring all in apple pie order.
Oh, George, I'm so proud of you. Mama's been calling you that little schnook who can't fix things. Now she'll have to change her tune.
Yeah.
Now she'll have to call you that little schnook who can fix things.
Yeah, again.
Well, if it's true that he fixed things, I'll pack up and go home tonight. Otherwise, I'll be staying until Christmas.
Turn on that water, Mama, and see for yourself.
Gas!
That's impossible. Turn on the gas.
What would you like for Christmas dinner, Mama?
Burns and Allen on Tuned to Yesterday from May 20th, 1948 on NBC. That brings to a close this hour of sitcoms on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.